This is number 0015, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Yes, it is indeed me, Peter Anthony Holder, with another edition of the Stuff File program, this one number 0015. And as usual, there's a full show coming your way. We'll talk to Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor, talking about terms that are deemed to be politically incorrect, like the term politically incorrect.
Politically correct and politically incorrect have been used so much that people now feel that it's politically incorrect to use the term politically correct.
Oliver Bishop Young turns trash into art. More importantly, trash bins into art. How did this all start?
Well, it sort of really kicked off with a brief that I wrote myself while I was studying at Goldsmiths University. And the brief was asking, it was sort of saying, look at objects that attract and repel each other. And from that kind of just small seed, I started to investigate Skips as a place where some people love the things that are thrown out there, and some people obviously hate it enough to put it there in the first place. So that really interested me as to, you know, how you can actually start changing people's views of what's thrown out and how you can use both the material and the space of the Skips.
We'll check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Fantasies. You know, they should probably best be kept by you and not shared with others. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here, on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And this week's guest Slater, the person who told you this was program number 0015, is Chris Mackerel, who is the owner of World FM. He's also the chief engineer, program director, IT guy, and the janitor. Apparently he does it all at World FM, which means he's very, very competent, or he's a control freak, one or the other. Anyway, you can check out their website, which is www.worldfm.co.nz, and we are happy and proud that the Stuff File, starting this week, is heard in New Zealand on the station of World FM, which is found in New Zealand at 88.5 FM. And the show is heard in New Zealand on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. That's World FM in New Zealand, heard in Tawa, Redwood, and Wellington. And again, welcome aboard to the Stuff File program. We have lots and lots of stuff, so let's get right to it. You know, one of the things we've often talked about on the Stuff File program and the old radio show that preceded is the fact that there are Jesus and or Mary sightings everywhere. And we have a new one. This one comes from Methuen, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts woman who recently separated from her husband and had her hours cut at work says an image of Jesus Christ that she sees on her iron has reassured her that life is going to be good. Mary Jo Cody first noticed the image, ironically, on Sunday when she walked into her daughter's room. The brownish residue on the bottom of the iron looks like the face of a man with long hair, so it's either Jesus Christ or Ted Nugent. The 44-year-old Cody was raised Catholic, and she and her two college-age daughters agree that the image looks like Jesus, and it is proof that he's listening. Cody tells the Eagle Tribune newspaper she hopes her story will inspire others during the holidays. She says she plans to keep the iron in the closet and buy a new one. Meanwhile, we go to London. You'll be surprised to hear about some of the things people leave behind when it comes to lost items on London's transport. Transport for London's Lost Property Office, which turns 75 this year, has dealt with unusual items including breast implants and bull sperm. How do you lose? Never mind. The office, which attempts to reconnect property owners with items left on buses, trains, and trams, said some of the oddest items to pass through its doors include a jar of bull sperm, a theatrical coffin, breast implants, and a 14-foot-long boat. The Times of London reported last week the items revealed in the Book of Lists London also include a vasectomy kit, a garden slide, an urn of ashes, and two human skulls. Lost Property Office officials said they collected 170,000 items in 2008, including 36,852 books, 28,550 bags, and 27,174 articles of clothing. There you go. Let's share some stories of cultural diversity, shall we? Jigme Wangchuck, age 11, was a student at St. Peter's School in Boston when he was enthroned in November in a Buddhist sect in India's Darjeeling district as a high priest, covering territory extending to neighboring Nepal and Bhutan. He will live in seclusion in his monastery, except for contact with Facebook friends that he made while he was in Boston. Ah, the power of Facebook. Meanwhile, an unprecedented toilet building spree has taken hold in India over the last 2 years, spurred on by government campaigns embraced by young women. No toilet, no bride, i.e. no marriage unless the male's dowry includes indoor plumbing. About 665 million people in India lack access to toilets, according to an October Washington Post dispatch. So there you go. You know, there are people out there who, over the years, have been adopted by loving families, and they still want to know who their natural birth parents are. Well, under the headline of Be Careful What You Wish For, Because You Might Get the Answer, here's a story for you right now. 41 years ago, Matthew Roberts was given up for adoption as a baby. Growing up in Rockford, Illinois, he didn't find out until his sister told him in the fifth grade. So let's all blame the sister, shall we? It came as a shock, and like many adopted children, 12 years ago, Matthew embarked on a mission to find his biological parents. Now living in Los Angeles, Matthew contacted the Lutheran Social Services Agency that located his mother, who now lives in Wisconsin. He immediately wrote to her, and the two began exchanging letters, though she seemed reluctant to reveal the identity of Matthew's father. She finally admitted to having been raped by his father in a drug-fueled orgy in 1967, and that his father was, wait for it, Charles Manson. No, really, Charles Manson, no kidding. Matthew, who is the spitting image of his serial killer father, reportedly fell into depression after discovering his identity. He said later, "He's my biological father. I can't help but have some kind of emotional connection. That's the hardest thing of all, feeling love for a monster who raped my mother. I don't want to love him, but I don't want to hate him either." Kind of reminds me of Dr. Zayas' prolific final statement in Planet of the Apes. "Don't look for it, Taylor. You might not like what you find." You know people will be watching him closely now to see if he manifests any of the tendencies that his father had. Poor kid. I know he's 41, but poor kid. Anyway, on to Cary, North Carolina. Police said a North Carolina man rammed his car into a hot dog stand when the vendor refused to sell him a hot dog and drink for a dollar. A local television station reported 23-year-old David Kelbaugh of Rollsville was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, that would be the car, hit and run, driving while intoxicated, and injury to property. Police said Kelbaugh was drinking at a bar in Cary early in the night when he left to order food at a hot dog stand. Kelbaugh asked for a hot dog and a drink for $1, and the vendor told him that wasn't enough money. Police said Kelbaugh yelled at the vendor, got into his car, and rammed the hot dog stand twice. The vendor was treated for back injuries. His name was not released. Kelbaugh fled and was later arrested. He has since been released on $6,000 bond. Meanwhile, the latest religious messages. Let's talk about that. Bonnet books. Have you ever heard about bonnet books? They're a booming new subcategory of the romance genre. This according to a report in the Wall Street Journal, which was in September, describing the books as G-rated Amish love stories that sell well amongst outside readers, but have found an even more avid audience among Amish women themselves. The typical bestseller is by a non-Amish writer, perhaps involving a woman inside the community who falls in love with an outsider. In one book described by the journal, the lovers, quote, actually kiss a couple of times in 326 pages. A couple of kisses in 326 pages? Wow, that is Amish, isn't it? And under the headline of questionable judgments, have you heard of ultra running? Ultra running, whose signature event is a 100-mile marathon, takes such a degree of commitment that 5 to 10% of participants are said even to have permanently removed their toenails in order to eliminate one of the potential sources of runner's discomfort. A sports podiatrist told the New York Times in October that many ultras consider their toenails useless appendages, remnants of claws from evolutionary times. But on the other hand, said one ultra runner, you know any sport has gone off the rails when you have to remove body parts to do it. There you go. Ultra running. That's a term I hadn't heard of before, and it's one of the things that's great about the English language, because there's always a new term or a new definition of an old term or a new way that an old term is perceived. Well, looks like we can't say anything anymore without someone getting offended. According to the Global Language Monitor's analysis of the top politically incorrect words in 2009, swine flu is the most un-PC term that is out there. On with us right now via the wonderful world that is Skype-to-Skype technology, we go to Austin, Texas, and talk with Paul J.J. Payak from the aforementioned Global Language Monitor. Hi, Paul. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
How are you? It's good to talk to you again, Peter.
Nice to have you on the program with us. So you collect all this information about words and phrases, both for the year and for the decade, and you come up with this list of politically incorrect words of 2009. How is swine flu politically incorrect?
Well, what happened is in the U.S., the Pork Producers Association, you know, and that's a big lobby, went to the White House and said, you can't have this thing called swine flu because people think that pigs are infected and that will hurt our industry. So you have to call it by its, you know, medical terminology, which is A parentheses H1N1. And so you notice if when anything comes out from Obama, it's always H1N1. Once in a while, they'll say swine flu. But then as we investigate it, we found out that there was a group in Israel, okay, that was against swine flu because it talked about swine. And that's, you know, not considered a meat that you can eat in Israel. Then we found out in the Muslim countries that for the same reason, people were clamoring against the name swine flu, and so it became politically incorrect, which is why you hear so many people calling it H1N1 right now.
Right. As a matter of fact, one of the things I do besides this program is I work for a television station, a network here in Canada called Global, and they never use the term swine flu, but our competitors do. We always use H1N1. So it's you find some people are using it and some people are not. Now, speaking of politically incorrect, I understand the term politically incorrect is in itself politically incorrect. How is that possible?
You know, these things go in cycles, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, so, for example, we have in England, we have people saying that you can't say senior citizen because it insults people. People should be called older person, where, of course, 30 years ago, we stopped calling people old people, started calling them senior citizens so as not to insult them.
Right.
Same thing with politically correct. Politically correct and politically incorrect have been used so much that people now feel that it's politically incorrect to use the term politically correct.
Wow. That's just too weird. Now, in your country, in the United States, we often hear, when we talk about American history, the term founding fathers. Now, apparently this is politically incorrect in 2009.
Right. We have to call them founders if you want to be polite about it. Okay. Now, even though if you look at any of the classic illustrations of the founders in Philadelphia, et cetera, at any of their various meetings, there were no women.
Well, I was about to ask, the Declaration of Independence, are there any female signatories to that?
No, that's kind of irrelevant. See, this goes beyond reason. See, this is not politically correctness or incorrectness. And when we put these things out, we say politically, parentheses, IN, close parentheses, correct, because it's like we're going both ways. I mean, we're talking about things that are politically correct and things that are politically incorrect and how they go back and forth. And the right likes one thing and other people on the left like the other thing. And it's so even though you have 30 or 40 men in a room depicted many, many different pictures and paintings and things of that nature, and on the record of signing the Declaration of Independence, it might be offensive to women if they say if we say founding fathers rather than founders.
Okay.
See, the whole idea is that you don't want to. It's like we have this heightened sense of sensibility, whereas, say, 100 years ago, you said things and you were supposed to have thick skins. And if you heard something that might insult you or whatever, well, you mounted an argument against it. But now the thinking is that you don't even say things that have the possibility of offending anybody. So in the same way, for example, the term minorities in the UK is considered verboten now because that can offend people that are minorities. They right. may feel like in a minority. Okay. So you hear things like minority majority and things of that nature. It gets to be a bit much.
And for that reason, I'm not even going to bring up the debate between Asian and Oriental. Let's just skip right past that one right now.
Let's just say that in certain quarters, Asian is considered appropriate. Oriental is considered insulting. Unfortunately, the people in China haven't found that out. The people in the Orient actually think the Orient is a decent name, you know. So it's kind of interesting. We don't want to offend other people, even though they are not offended.
Right. I want to go back to some of the other things, besides politically incorrect. I started by mentioning some other things that you talk about, which is top words of the decades and also top phrases of the decade. The decade runs from 2000 to 2009. Some of the words or terms that are big are always the things that are in pop culture. Of course, your president, Obama, is one of those words. Global warming, 9/11, bailout, evacuee, refugee. Google is an interesting one because Google has not only become a company name, it's become a verb.
It's become a verb, and it actually was a verb. It actually was a word before the company. You know, Google, G-O-O-G-O-L, is an actual word, a mathematical term that means one followed by 100 zeros. And then there's a Googleplex, which is a Google of Googles. Okay, so that's a really big number. That's the largest named number. And when the company's founders founded Google in the late 90s, evidently they misspelled the word. And so we have Google spelled this way, and it is a verb now. And that's actually what you want. You hear people in branding situations saying the last thing you want is for your company to slip into language. Like, you don't want to be a Xerox machine, okay, because it kind of ruins your brand. But it's what can be better than have people say, Google it, right? Or as President Bush used to say, I do to Google.
Now, when you look at some of the words, the top words of the decade, are you looking at a situation that's primarily North American, Western civilization, or are you looking globally? Because I would assume something like Google would be a global term, yet some of the others that are on the list might pertain to the United States, you know, red state, blue state, for instance. A lot of people in Europe might not know what the heck that means.
Right. Okay. And what we do is we look for words that span the English-speaking world. Okay. And of course, a primary influence in the English-speaking world right now, one of the drivers is American culture. And that's either for good or ill. But we try to find words that make sense around the planet. Okay. Things like tsunami, right? Tsunami was one of the top words of the decade. And that's a Japanese of Japanese origin, which actually just means harbor wave. But that was used over and over again with the Southeast Asian tsunami on Boxer Day, the day after Christmas, that had resulted in 230,000 lives either being lost or still missing. And so a name like tsunami, Chinglish, which is a hybrid of the English language and the Chinese language, coming together and forming like a whole new patois. All these interesting words coming out, some of them hysterically funny. But that's happening when you have 250 million people in China studying English. And when the cultural clashes, some interesting things come out. And then things like Twitter. And the technology terms are universal.
Okay. Just got a couple of minutes. I want to say very quickly, some of the things that happen with the language is we often get a lot of language from popular culture, and sometimes that comes from films. Two come to mind right now. Slumdog is one term that's in the news that's become part of the language, and Brokeback.
Yes. Brokeback. Brokeback is especially interesting because, you know, Brokeback Mountain. And Brokeback Mountain was kind of like a seminal film insofar as it treated a gay subject, okay, And yet it was accepted in very wide society, and it became like a safe way to talk about gay matters, and there were jokes, and it was very open. And if we found out a couple of years ago that from our friends in China that the young urban youth in China, the hipsters over there, that they started saying "brokeback" as another term for gay. And in Chinese, you know, I don't really know what the term for gay was, but brokeback became an established term. And we found out that was actually added. There was an ideogram created to represent the term brokeback. And so that shows the cross-cultural dissemination of how language works, right? It's an English language film. It's very big around the world. It says a certain thing. The youth in China use it as a certain thing. All of a sudden, it's a word. Okay, and it's a word meaning gay. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Always fascinating to talk to you, Paul. People can find out more information by going to the website, which is www.languagemonitor.com. That's www.languagemonitor.com. We're, of course, talking about the Global Language Monitor. And, Paul, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Peter. Talk to you next time.
That's Paul J.J. Payak from the Global Language Monitor. Again, you can visit their website at www.languagemonitor.com. That's www.languagemonitor.com. You can also find links to languagemonitor.com by going to my website, thestufffile.com, or peteranthonyholder.com. And by the way, for those of you new to the program, stuff is spelled STUPH. Visit the website, thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, heard online, on the air in New Zealand, also on cyberstationusa.com, and everywhere.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. You're listening to The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@peteranthonyholder.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook.
And still to come, we'll talk to Oliver Bishop Young about his skip conversion project in England. Basically, he turns garbage bins into useful items other than putting garbage in them. We'll talk about that. There's also the mailbag coming up, and Steve Walsh, our man of the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Plus, of course, we have a Stuff File idiot of the day. Now, we have more stuff right here, right now. You know, on this program and on the old radio show, I share a lot of bizarre stories from around the world, and a lot of them, let's be honest, they deal with people hurting themselves in some way, shape, or form. And some people have said, you know, Peter, you're just testing fate when you do this, that maybe something will happen to you. And I know I probably will become a Darwin file story myself somewhere down the line. I'll probably slip and fall in the bathtub and die or some other bizarre thing. But until that point, I will continue to test fate and bring these stories to you, such as the story of daredevil Scottish stunt bicyclist Danny McCaskill. Now, he does electrifying feats that are featured on popular YouTube videos. Well, he recently suffered a broken collarbone in October when he tripped on a curb while out for a walk in downtown Edinburgh. Talk about tempting fate. Now, I alluded to just a few moments ago the Darwin File. And for those of you new to the program, the Darwin File are stories that deal with people who have found the way to leave the planet in bizarre and strange methods. Because I've often said, the tree of life is often self-pruning. Two men decided to rob a cell phone store in Columbia, South Carolina. Lacking a disguise, they spray-painted their faces gold After the robbery of the store, which was located on Sparkleberry Lane, what are the odds? Robber Thomas James, age 23, was having difficulty breathing. Michael Gregory Thomas, age 23, panicked. He told police later and tried calling various people for help. By the time he got James to the hospital, he had died, apparently from paint fumes. Thomas was charged with armed robbery. "It's the damnedest one I've had in 34 years," said Richland County Sheriff Leon Lott. "Justice gets served in interesting ways sometimes," he said. The irony, they had hoped to use the loot for some painted ladies. That's the Darwin file. Okay, a good news story. The epic drought that hit central Texas this year, causing a 30-foot drop in the water level at Lake Travis near Austin, also helped police solve three stolen vehicle cases. Of the three exposed at the bottom of the lake in July was one, with the keys still in the ignition, missing since 1988. Okay, let's talk a little bit about flashing, shall we? Remember the good old days when a flashing pervert would jump out from behind some bushes wearing a trench coat and expose himself? Well, times have apparently changed. We've all gone high-tech now. In Cartersville, Georgia, 29-year-old Stephen Joseph Woods Jr. allegedly approached a woman in a grocery store parking lot and asked if she wanted to see something. Before she had a chance to say no, he showed her a picture of his own genitalia on his cell phone. So police arrested him, and he was charged with distributing obscene materials. Three photos of a man's genitalia were found on the phone. The photos were printed, and the woman identified one of the images as the one she had been shown. Now, I don't know if that is inadvertently giving him what he wants, the knowledge and joy that his naughty bits were picked out of a lineup. But anyway, he's off to jail. Now, guys, if you're looking for an excuse out there with your lovely bride of getting out of housework, you may, in a pinch, in a stretch, use this one. According to a new study, household chores, including using a vacuum cleaner or microwave oven, could reduce a man's chances of having children. Researchers at Stanford University exposed male volunteers to electromagnetic fields, high doses of which are produced by all electrically charged objects, including refrigerators and vacuum cleaners, and found such exposure could double the risk of having poor quality sperm. Fertility expert Dr. D. Kuhn Lee said his work provides the first evidence of a link between electrical goods and declining male fertility. The research will be published in January in the journal Reproductive Toxicology. So guys, I've given you an excuse. Whether you decide to go and use it is up to you. And finally, here's a story that's very, very high on the ick factor. Peruvian police said last week they had broken up a gang that allegedly killed dozens of people and sold their fat to buyers who used it to make cosmetics. Four Peruvians were arrested on suspicion of kidnapping, murder, and trafficking in human fat. The group stored the fat it collected in used soda and water bottles, which police showed reporters. "We have people detained who have declared and stated how they murdered people with the aim being to extract their fat in rudimentary labs and sell it," according to a police commander. In addition to those taken into custody, police said they were searching for others who bought fat from the gang or might have worked with it. Remains from some of the victims were found at a rural house in the region of Huánuco, where the group worked, according to a police video. Police said they were investigating 60 disappearances in the area that might be linked to the gang. The investigation started this month after police heard about a shipment of fat that arrived in Lima by bus from Peru's mountains. Nowhere in the story, by the way, does it mention the size of the people that were being abducted and murdered. Were the people who they were after for their fat, were they indeed, you know, fat? Because, you know, we all have a certain amount of body fat. So how were they going about finding these people? And as I've often said on stories in the Stuff File, the crime is heinous enough. What I want to know is the thought process that began this crime spree. There were some people sitting around in a house over some wine saying, "You know what we should do? We should kill people for their fat." That's a very sick, sick mind. Okay, on to some happier things. Our next guest joins us via the wonderful technology that is Skype to Skype. Dumpster diving just isn't what it used to be. Designer Oliver Bishop Young takes the trash out of dumpsters and turns them into tubs of fun with his Skip Conversions project. He joins us from London, England. Hi, Oliver. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for being on with us. Your project, how did you come up with the idea of turning dumpsters into workable pieces of art and workable items as well?
Well, it sort of really kicked off with a brief that I wrote myself while I was studying at Goldsmiths University. And the brief was asking, it was sort of saying, look at objects that attract and repel each other. And from that kind of just small seed, I started to investigate Skips as a place where some people love the things that are thrown out there and some people obviously hate it enough to put it there in the first place. So that really interested me as to, you know, how you can actually start changing people's views of what's thrown out and how you can use both the material and the space of the Skips.
Okay, first of all, the Skip, I would assume that's a British terminology for a dumpster. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, got you. Now, I've seen some pictures on the website. We should mention the website, which is oliverbishopyoung.co.uk, although you have a separate site as well for just this, do you not? Skip Conversions?
I did have. It was kind of a trial sort of version, really. It's now just, it's kind of been taken down. But it was a site where you could use it to search and find skips in the local kind of London area.
Okay.
It was a small model that maybe can one day be applied a bit more globally.
Well, I checked out your website, and I saw some of the pictures of what you've done. It's very impressive. So far, you've turned dumpsters into a swimming pool, a lovely flower garden, a mini skate ramp or skateboard ramp, a grassy park, a comfy lounge area. Is this one of the situations where the sky's the limit as to what you can turn these things into?
I think so. It's kind of the limit is the place that you can find to do it, really. Most of them have been a bit of a response to what the area is lacking or what the event needs to kind of get that area kind of kickstarted. So the park has been a really popular one in London because there's a lot of spaces that are very kind of cramped and crowded streets. So to give people a little breather, it goes down a treat.
Okay, so now you take these dumpsters, and I would assume to a certain extent, as a matter of fact, I look at the pictures and I see the name Elliot written across it. I assume that's a company name. So first of all, how and where do you get these dumpsters from? Do you talk to companies before you turn these dumpsters into these workable pieces of art that you've done?
Yeah, I was actually quite lucky. I was at the beginning when I was knowing I was trying to find some skips to do these with. I got in touch with a few companies, and the guy that runs Elliot Skips, his daughter had just come to Goldsmiths University, and I think he said to me, "Oh yeah, I'll phone you back like all the rest." But when he spoke to his wife that night, I think she kind of poked him and said, "You've got to do that. You've got to help this guy out." So I had a really good relationship with him. He's been very kind of helpful providing skips, and I think he also gets to enjoy kind of coming along and seeing what's happening next.
I'm curious to know what kind of residual this has had for his business. I mean, like I said, I look at the picture and each one says Elliot on the side. Obviously, it's the dumpster company. It must do well for the business, too.
Hopefully, that's the idea. I mean, I think in reality, and most of the people who go and get skips will get them when they kind of need them. So if someone's seen my work and needs a skip, then I think that's great. But yeah, fingers crossed he's had a bit more trade from it.
So how many of these things have you done so far?
It'd be hard to count. I think in terms of different versions, probably around 12. And there's been about kind of four or five actual different location and events.
So after you do these and you have these at various locations and events, as you say, what happens to them then? Are they then turned back into what they were initially designed for, or are these permanent fixtures that are going to stay someplace somewhere?
No, none of them's been permanent yet. A few have toured a couple of locations, but generally everything goes back to where it was. So they kind of are created for usually a sort of about a week-long event, and then once it's had its kind of time and it's done its job, the skip goes back and is continued to be used and all the materials go back to where they come from.
What kind of notoriety or attention have you drawn from doing this? I mean, here I am calling you across the pond in Canada and you're in the UK. Are you getting a lot of media attention in England and beyond?
Yeah, there's been a fair amount of attention. It's my website at the beginning got a lot of hits, which was quite impressive. But I mean, there has been other people doing similar things in other countries. So I think also people maybe have seen things similar, but it kind of has very different appearances in each location and each time. So that there's people such as Rosita Sabanas in Spain who have been doing something a little bit similar for a long time. They do a lot of really interesting architectural work. So I think there's a lot of people who are interested in this, in about how you can use public spaces and actually make them a little more accessible to the public and freer for the public to kind of change them. And so that kind of following finds it interesting to sort of see new outcomes of that.
And besides doing this, I mentioned in the introduction you're a designer. Besides doing this, what other projects are you working on? What pays the bills for you? What types of design work pays the bills for you?
I'm a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And so over the last kind of previous year or so, I've predominantly been working for a company here in the UK called Redesign. And with them, we put on sort of sustainable exhibitions in museums and galleries, and also kind of our own initiated ones. And through that, we have a kind of network of designers that we help promote. So that's kind of, in a way, my day job. And then outside of that, there's been other exhibitions and events that I've got involved with since then. So it's kind of, it's fairly bitty, but it's very interesting to be sort of open and available to do these new things. Yeah, it's been really good.
And besides the fact that you've received some attention for doing this beyond the shores of the UK, would you like to see this grow, if not done by you, done by others around the world? And what's the message you really want to get out there?
For me, this project, the kind of the photos that you see on my site, those were a way of kind of advertising and creating the whole kind of hype around my other ideas about actually starting to share the waste and use the materials that are thrown into skips and make it a little bit more attractive. And hopefully, my goal really is to reduce the amount that we throw away as a kind of society. So that's what I hope it kind of helps to affect. If people are looking in skips more and kind of seeing some more potential in those objects, then that's making me happy.
Well, it certainly is a creative environmental message that you're sending out, and congratulations to you for coming up with it. I thank you very, very much, Oliver, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you.
Designer Oliver Bishop Young and his skip conversion project. Again, you can check out his website at oliverbishopyoung.co.uk to check out the really neat work he has done. And you can find the links by going to my website, thestufffile.com. Just click on the What's On page for this corresponding show, which is 0015, and you'll find all the information. Again, my website is thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, online in many locations, including cyberstationusa.com and also in New Zealand on World FM. Time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And just a couple of things I want to mention in the mailbag this time around. We get a message from Frank. Frank sent this message to my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Frank writes, "Love your show. Listen to it at work while attending conference calls. More than a few times, I am called out as to why I was laughing on the phone. I then discovered the phone mute button." Congratulations on finding the mute button, Frank. Glad you like the show, and I hope that the show doesn't get you in trouble with your bosses or people in the conference call in the future. Once again, let me welcome the listeners who are joining us via World FM 88.5 FM, which broadcasts to Tawa, Redwood, and Wellington in New Zealand. They have a web stream at www.worldfm.co.nz. Nice to have you folks aboard with us. And I'll mention what I said last week on the show for the folks who had just joined us via cyberstationusa.com. Don't forget, you can listen to past shows as they are all archived on my website at peteranthonyholder.com, also at thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Remember, this show is number 0015, which means there are 14 previous shows that you have missed, and they've all been fascinating, just fascinating. So check it out at peteranthonyholder.com or thestufffile.com. You can also subscribe to the shows at iTunes. Plus, for Facebook users, remember to join the Stuff File group. And again, welcome to all you fine Kiwis now listening to the show via World FM. And folks, no matter where you are listening to us from, since the audience seems to be growing, drop me a line and let me know where you are hearing us and how, be it online or over the air. I'd love to hear from you. The email address is peter@peteranthonyholder.com. And you could also, of course, find me on Facebook. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, I finally got around to getting the Stuff File domain name, so the website also can be found by going to thestufffile.com. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
I'm still recovering from Thanksgiving turkey.
Did you have a good one?
Oh, it was wonderful. My favorite holiday. Oh. I know you have people listening all over the world now.
Yes, as a matter of fact, this is the first show that's heard on World FM, 88.5 FM in New Zealand.
Of all places.
Yes, Tawa, Redwood, and Wellington.
I love that. I've always wanted to be on the air in Wellington.
Well, now you are.
Well, I'm honored.
Yeah, you
really
are.
Really, I am. I mean, the reach of this show, and I'm going to tell them funny stories about what's happening right in the middle of the United States of America.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Boy, what are the if only my mom could see me now.
You need a medium for that, but besides the point, yes.
That's true, too. Okay, I'll stop. Had a great Thanksgiving, though. It was wonderful.
Excellent, excellent.
Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I'm stuffed, still stuffed all this time later.
Are you getting a lot of football in, too? Is that another thing you do?
Oh, yeah, gosh, a lot of football. Went to Kansas City for the Missouri-Kansas game over the weekend. Oh, gosh, I'm telling you, it's having a lot of fun.
Excellent, excellent.
Fun, 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 I tell you.
Well, what do you have for us this week, sir?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
That'd be the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it,
the Cheese State.
Where the motto is,
if it's cheddar,
it's better. In Sheboygan, 23-year-old Ian Baker is facing his fourth drunken driving charge after failing a breathalyzer test, but he says this time it's not his fault. His defense is that he failed this test, and this test really was not the result of him drinking alcohol, but rather eating a steak with Jack Daniel's sauce. Rather innovative.
Yeah.
He swears he didn't consume any alcohol, just a Jack Daniel's steak. His 0.07 blood alcohol level makes police think otherwise. And sadly for this young man, the Jack Daniel's website clearly states that their trademark Jack Daniel's barbecue and steak sauces, which are made by Heinz, by the way, contain no alcohol whatsoever.
Nice try.
Yeah, it
actually,
quite work.
Actually, not actually. It's still D for effort. It's really not that good.
Yeah, I know. We've heard some good efforts, some bad efforts, and this one, well, yeah, it's an effort.
Yeah.
I know, we're going to stay here, okay? So once again, I'm going to say Dateline and say Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Still the Badger State.
Still we like to call it what?
Cheese State.
Where the motto's what?
If it's cheddar.
It's better?
Yep.
That was pretty fast. A 21-year-old University of Wisconsin Milwaukee student said he was walking home from work around 1:15 a.m. when he was pulled into an alley and told to lay face down while someone put a gun to his neck. Four men took his wallet, his keys, and his cell phone. But then something very strange happened. One of the muggers noticed the victim had an Army ID in the wallet, and that he was an Army reservist. So that guy, presumably the group's leader, told the others to return the items, and they put most of his belongings on the ground next to the guy. The victim told police, he says, the guy continued to say throughout the situation that he respects what I do. And at one point, he actually thanked me, and he actually apologized. The group then started walking away, but per the victim, the leader of the group actually walked back and gave him a quick fist bump, which he found very strange. The reservist asked not to be identified because the robbers still have his keys.
Well, obviously those robbers were raised right by their parents. They're still criminals, but they're raised
They're still
right.
criminals, but at least they're criminals with a conscience,
exactly.
My friend.
Exactly.
Dateline, St. Paul, Minnesota.
That would be the Gopher State.
Or Land of 10,000 Lakes, if
yes,
you prefer.
Yes.
A man was stopped after he set off the security system while leaving a Kmart store in St. Paul. Security officers had already been keeping an eye on Spiral Lightning Hawk. That's quite a name. As he shopped, and they saw him go into the men's room with merchandise, including women's underwear and a pair of fishnet stockings. But he came out with, well, anything, he had nothing in his hands. Nothing, I tell you, nothing. And he headed for the front door. When he was stopped, officers found two DVDs under his shirt. He was wearing the panties and the stockings. Notice I said he. Lightning Hawk's explanation? He indicated he was trying to develop his Halloween costume and didn't have the money to buy the items, a police spokesman said. Kind of interesting considering it's several weeks past Halloween, but hey, he was charged with theft.
You know, I like the excuse from the Jack Daniels guy better, and that was lame then.
I think that had more plausibility, let's put it that way.
Gravitas,
I love that word.
There you go.
Dateline, Akron, Ohio.
Oh no, Ohio, I can hardly wait to say goodbye,
oh. Oh, there's that song again. Yes,
yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's the Buckeye State.
Yeah, I used to live there, you know.
One of many.
Yes, that's true.
Not your favorite state, though, right?
No, the year of my life, I'll never get back.
I hear you.
Yes.
Yeah.
She came at my client with the stiletto, and my client acted accordingly, says attorney Tom Ducato. His client, Shatina Davis, a stripper in Akron, had a dispute with a new dancer. Davis was allegedly upset with the new dancer, Joe Nolan, who's 52 years old, by the way, who had started work at the club that day, because Davis thought she'd lure regular customers away from her. Hey, if you're 22 and you're concerned a 52 is going to take customers away from you, you ain't got much, babe. Anyway, after angry words, Nolan allegedly came at Davis wielding her shoe. Stiletto, remember. And Davis, who was 8 months pregnant, she's dancing and she's 8 months pregnant, grabbed the shoe and whacked Nolan over the head with it. Shwack! Nolan suffered lacerations that took 7 surgical staples to close. Not the first time, I'm sure, she said staples. Assistant prosecutor Norman Schroth called it a he said, she said case and offered Davis a plea bargain, 1 year of probation. It was accepted.
Now, admittedly, Steve, you and I don't necessarily frequent strip clubs.
That's true.
But in our past, we've probably both been in strip clubs.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And are you attracted to a strip club which would highlight a 52-year-old stripper and an 8-month pregnant stripper? If that was on the roster of the strip club you were going to, wouldn't you think move to the one next door?
I'm thinking it wouldn't get me excited.
As
to use a children's plaything, it wouldn't get my jolly jumper.
Okay.
It's a toy, folks. It's a toy.
Yes.
Let's move on, shall we?
Please.
Dateline, Topeka, Kansas.
That would be the Sunflower State.
Yeah, my next door state. Never lived there.
Not yet.
Topeka police said a man who was trying to rob a discount cigarette store got stuck in a vent and had to be rescued by firefighters. Police said the man was stuck in a ventilation pipe for about 3 hours. He eventually managed to call his daughter, who called 911. Firefighters found the man head down in a ventilation pipe, and they pulled the guy out. He was taken to a Topeka hospital and will be charged once he's released. The police officers say the burglar wasn't very cat-like.
Well, that situation must have been quite claustrophobic for him, but I think the place he's going to next will give him more room.
You know, if I were in a place like that, I'd be frustrated and I'd go nuts. And once I got out, I'd be angry.
Angry? Yes, you'd be angry.
And you know what I do when I get angry, Peter?
I think I do.
Unlike some people, I take keyboard in hand and write a 2-minute tirade.
Yes, you do.
And I've done one, which I have for you right now.
Tirade away.
Thank you. It is, as I mentioned, time for that tirade. And this time I want to talk about people who let you in on certain information you'd rather do without. No, I'm not talking about one of your workmates letting you in on details of a sexual encounter. I'm talking about something more onerous than listening to that, having to listen to some guy talk about his success in fantasy football. You know, while sitting in the press box at a recent St. Louis Rams game, I had the displeasure of being seated next to a younger member of the media who's under this false impression that other people in the press box actually care what he has to say about anything, let alone his fantasy football picks. this guy started out by telling everyone who he hopes would listen that he hoped his players would do well in the upcoming game. Okay, that's good. I'm glad for you. And once the game got underway, he not only zeroed in on the players he had in the Rams-Saints game, but on other action going on around the NFL at the same time. Let me make this clear. I have nothing against fantasy football or fantasy baseball or any other fantasy endeavors in which you take part, but I don't want to hear about them. Just as I don't want to hear how you called a great play that worked when playing your Game Boy or Nintendo, this is your business. There's a rule in the press box, just about any press box I've been in, and I've been in quite a few of them. There's no cheering in the press box. This guy's yoo-hoos when his players did well was the equivalent of cheering, and that's not allowed. I did say that at one point, I said to this guy, you know, there's no cheering in the press box. He smiled and continued his idiocy. You know, it would have been nice to have other real media people back me up on this one.
Yes, Steve. You know, I spent a few years myself working in the press box, as I'm sure you're quite aware.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And the rules when it comes to cheering, well, there are none. Talking positively about a team from the press box is akin to talking at a urinal. You just don't do it.
You just don't do it. I said that to the governor of Missouri one time. He stood next to me in the urinal and said, "Hello, Steve." And I said, "Governor, you're not allowed to talk to me. You're breaking the rule."
Exactly. But, Steve, I got to tell you, I had a great weekend last week with both of my fantasy football teams in two leagues. I mean, ironically, I couldn't.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
I was going to tell you about Jay Cutler. He You don't want to hear about Jay Cutler?
Thank you. I know what happened in real life, Peter.
Joseph Addai. Rashid Mendenhall?
Yeah. Your fantasy football picks. Yeah. Were you in the press box with me the other day?
I won both my games.
I'm so proud of you.
Okay.
And if only your parents could enjoy this now.
People can enjoy your work, by the way. They can visit
the
website.
You.
Yes.
Plug.
Yeah, they can enjoy your work at www.missourinet.com, and they can read the blog there that you have at MissouriNet as well. And,
right.
Of course, people can now hear you as they are hearing you right now in New Zealand. There you go.
I'm so proud to hear. I'm in New Zealand. I love it.
There you go. Steve, say those three magic words.
Hit the theme.
This is the Stuff File.
And we have one more item on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. That item would be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Wickler Moran Mora, age 38, sent a middle-of-the-night text message to his wife. He had been kidnapped, he said. Don't call. Take it easy. They said they will let me go, he told her. When the Tampa, Florida woman said she was calling police, he quickly replied that he had been let go already. Too late. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office tracked down his phone and discovered Moran Mora, a pastor at the Christ Our Righteousness Chapel. I think that bears repeating. A pastor at the Christ Our Righteousness Chapel had faked the incident as cover since he was with another woman. He was arrested and charged with making a false report. We are fine now, Moran Mora said the next day. It was a mistake, and everything is solved between us. Well, mistake, that's a given. Everything is already fine and solved with his wife? That's excessively optimistic. Why would a person fake his own kidnapping just for the sake of a tryst? A man of the cloth at that? Just to fool his wife? And he would think he could get away with it? There's only one reason. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. That's number 0015. The website, by the way, is thestufffile.com. And stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. For those of you who are new to the show, that's thestufffile.com, where you can find information and links to all of our guests and all the information on this show on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and program number, and again, that number is 0015. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can also find me at Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including World FM in New Zealand and CyberStationUSA.com. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.